Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Fernandez, who scored from the penalty spot for Manchester United against Club Brugge in the round of 32. This to put them in front in the quarterfinal. It's Fernandez, who scores!
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters. A huge thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. They are the presenting sponsors of this show. If you get in an accident, it could be a car, boat, motorcycle, nobody wants you to, but if you do, you need representation. It's the Daspit Law Firm, 713-322-HURT. They are bilingual. And the Daspit Law Firm is going to bring you a personalized approach. They'll work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. And like I always say on this show, if not for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, we're not on the air. So a big thank you to our presenting sponsor. And of course, they're bilingual. So is my next guest. But we're not going to do this in Spanish from my end of things to spare you all. We're joined now by Houston Dynamo defender Zarek Valentin. Zarek, thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, let's just get right into just... Now that you got back, you processed the bubble, you know, explain a little bit to the people out there listening when they hear the word bubble, what did that all really mean down in Orlando?
Okay, so basically the bubble was two hotels that made up 24, I guess, if we're not going to count Dallas and Nashville, 24 MLS teams. And the bubble was essentially these two hotels on the same lot. We had access to two pools, and there was a soccer pool. There was just some... There were some mini games that we could play. And ultimately, the teams were separated into two hotels, meal rooms, all separate. But the bubble meaning we could not leave our little compound. There was roads separating it. So we could, you saw a lot of coaches doing runnings on some of the paths, but the paths never left our two hotels. So that was ultimately the bubble. And then we take buses directly from there to the training facility. And we'd have to walk with masks. We were, all the fields were separated by barriers. And then we'd get straight back on the buses and drive back. So that was our two quote-unquote bubbles that we had to take part in Orlando.
How structured? I imagine your days were pretty structured, but how structured were your days? And then how did Todd Ramos and his staff maybe say, hey, I need to lay off the guys? And how much time might you get in a position like that? Because I know the games are coming thick and heavy.
Of course. I think that the staff handled everything very well. There was about 4 hours in the afternoon between once we'd get back at 1 o'clock from training. We'd finish training around finish lunch around 1:30. And then from about 2 till 7, we would have treatments. And then that would be kind of our downtime. Every once in a while, we would have testing thrown in there. We did testing every other day. We had to do testing before games to assure that we were fine. And once Dallas and Nashville got out of there, in which they brought COVID into the bubble from their markets previously, it couldn't have gone much smoother. Yes, it's a little bit annoying that we had to get up at 7 o'clock to go do testing, but ultimately we were done the rest of the day, and we didn't, you know, guys could go back and take a nap after training, which is a little soccer siesta, as we call it. And ultimately the staff and Caesar and Matt and the club were really organized down there, and we're made easy for us to just focus on playing.
Talking to Zarek Valentin of the Houston Dynamo, the right back. Acquired from the Portland Timbers. Now, you know, if I look at what's going on, one of my first gut feelings is teams and individuals that deal with these sudden changes and all these inconveniences and differences in their training regimes maybe are going to be the ones that have the advantage. Is that fair to say?
Definitely. I think the quicker people can adapt to the changes and what's going on, probably the better those teams will be. And I was talking to one of my buddies on the Timbers, and to give a little bit of insight into that thought process and how they handled their situation, the past 2 years, they've had to open up with games on the road because of new construction. So two seasons ago in 2018, we started with 5 games on the road. In 2019, they started with 12 games on the road. So ultimately, that team is very used to being in a hotel, being pretty low-key, having to make do. So the whole quote-unquote bubble that we were in was something that was so normal for that team. So they might have had a little bit of an advantage in that sense, because that was all they've been known, or that was all they've known for the past 2 years, because they were forced into that for the stadium construction. And yeah, definitely there's some aspects of it where you want to try to settle in as quick as possible. But ultimately, once the ball gets out there, then you got to make plays, and that kind of kicks in. And once you step in those lines, that's when you revert back to your normal tendencies. And that's what we love doing. And that's why we're willing to put up with some of these interesting, unprecedented times, because that's what we love. And we're willing to do whatever to get back to our normal.
Do you realize this one day will be looked at as a real defining, crazy moment in the history of Major League Soccer, 15, 20 years from now?
100%. I bet you Don, when he came into year 25, didn't think it would go this way. But ultimately, I think that there's going to be a lot of positives, because the league has to adapt. The league is adapting. Players are adapting. And I think that you're going to see some positive things come from that. And personally, one of the most impressive and positive takeaways has been VAR. As much as I cannot stand it for that, in my opinion, a very bad PK call against LA Galaxy. I think if you call that, you can call one every single corner kick. But regardless, the communication between the guy in the booth and the referee on the field is fantastic to see, because you get to see the different angles. You get to see them talk through a situation. You get to see exactly their thought processes and what they see. And then there's no middle ground. So the fan that's watching from the stands, or not from the stands, from home, immediately gets to see it. And then you can go back and watch the broadcast and hear the referee speak through that entire process. And for me, that's been one of the most positive things to take away from MLS's
battle. No, I think it's powerful. I think it takes a lot of you know, what if or nebulous areas out of the whole thing to just hear the two guys communicate.
Of course.
Do you have any indication that that's going to continue on?
I don't know yet. I do think that from all the positive press they're getting about it, I'd be really hard pressed to think they wouldn't do it, because usually people crush VAR because of the length of time and the unknown aspect of it. But this clears all that up. And as long as the referees they're doing the job to the best of their abilities, and they make mistakes, but ultimately you can go back and see the thought process, and then they'll get better from that as well. And I think it also gives the viewers a totally different, a different aspect, and to see and to hear what the thought process of the referee is, which a lot of times we don't even get on the field because it's really difficult. And a lot of those moments are quick. I am not a huge fan of the in-game coaching ones. I think that's a little bit interesting. That's maybe call me old school, but I think the VAR one is one that hopefully will stick.
Yeah, I love it too. I agree with you 100% on all fronts with the VAR. And I think it leads to just making things clearer to everybody. And at least you all know what their thought process was at the end of the day with it. Zarek Valentin, Houston Dynamo defender, joining us. Okay, you get back to Houston. What were the first 2 days back like, and getting back to your family, you know, newborn, all kinds of interesting things going on in your life?
Yeah, definitely. For me, it was great to be back. My wife basically lateraled our 10-month-old like a rugby football and took a seat on the couch for about 2 days. So she said, listen, you got
to come up in this interview.
100%.
Good lateral.
Yeah, no, it was illegal. It was backwards, so we're good. So as a dad, you have to know, and I know all my teammates know, that once we got back in there, we were able to sleep through the night. We were able to take naps. We had all of that. So you might as well rest it up, because we had a few days off and I was on duty for essentially a few days straight through the, I mean, thankfully Cam was sleeping through the night, but naps, diapers, every dirty diaper coming towards dad. Yeah. Mom got to rest on the couch for a bit. And I think that there was definitely a few days though where it was nice to be back with family, but it felt a bittersweet because of the way we exited the tournament. And I think that the team took a lot of positive steps in different games. I think that, you know, we can look back and be very critical as a defender to have 2 leads in 2 games and to not come away with 3 points. I can be very critical about that, and I always will, because I try to hold myself and the team to a standard. We should close those games out. Obviously, some things aren't completely in our control, but ultimately we took some positive steps. But it's to a 90th minute PK is never going to feel good, even if it is warranted. It's never going to be a fun way to go out, and it's going to be tough. But ultimately, we know that there will be games, which is exciting. And when we get to those points, first one against Dallas. I mean, I hate Dallas. I will say that openly. I've said that since day one. It's the Philadelphia Eagle in me is where it comes from. But it helps me fit in here. But you know, that gives us some more motivation going into that first game.
All right, so let me talk about that last 45 minutes. So we're not going to dwell on it, but
watching
it at home, you guys took a lot of pressure from the Galaxy. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, one of the things you would have said to yourself was, how could we have, at least for moments, changed the level of pressure, flipped it on them, held the ball maybe a little bit longer? Are these things you're talking about? And you know, how truthful is what I'm saying when it comes to that second 45 minutes?
You're spot on. I think that teams, and I've been on multiple different teams, and one of the first things that you'll say is it felt as if we got into a shell too early. And I think of a boxer. Once you get into the corner, it felt like we put our hands up and we're just trying to ride out until the end of the game. And I think we made some good subs. I thought Ronaldo came on for Mauro and did very well. And I don't think he necessarily thought, you know, with Christian, it was difficult in his quarantine period and stuff like that. I thought Ronaldo came on and did very well. I think ultimately the thing that we could have done better is been a little bit braver on the ball. I think we tried a few times and it didn't necessarily work out because they were pressuring pretty high. And we just reverted to sitting back into a shell and hoping to maybe catch them on the break. And it's very difficult for any team to defend that deep against good teams and good players for 45 minutes. And you saw that against LAFC with us. And you see, I mean, at most teams against LAFC, but it's very difficult for us to do that. So I think we do need to be a bit braver in possession when it comes to those times. And I think a lot of that comes with trying to recruit. Obviously, if you're more fit, then you're fresher and then you're allowed to play. I think a lot of times when players get tired, their mind starts to slow down. A lot of times building out of the back and playing, you have to think a few steps ahead. And if you can't get there in your brain, then your body won't necessarily know exactly what moves to make. So then as a defender, you might just resort to playing it in the channels. And Albert and Nico or whoever, whoever's up top can only run those balls down so much. And I think that you're spot on with a lot of what you're saying. That's definitely something that staff and us look about. It's something we speak about internally because no one wants to defend for 45 minutes. That's not fun. That's not why we play the game. You want to play on the front foot. And, you know, we were trying to get a result, but I think if we managed the ball a little bit, we could have rested on the ball, which would have given us more energy to step to players a little bit quicker.
We're talking to Zarek Valentin, Dynamo defender. Great conversation here, and appreciate him coming on the show tonight. If I asked you to describe to the fan base the playing style of the team, now it may still be evolving because it's a new coach, Tab's getting used to it, his staff is good. How would you describe it to the fans?
How would I describe it? I think that one of the first things people see from us is we try to take advantage of moments when we can step and put the other team under pressure. It's difficult when you get tired to do that because when you want to press a team and one player arrives late or reacts late, a team can play out of that. And for example, we had very good moments against, I would say, first half against LAFC. I thought we did it well. And then obviously as you get tired, players don't get as close to their marks and then they're allowed to play out of pressure. And I think, for example, a bad example would be our away at Kansas City. A lot of times one or two or three guys might go and the fourth would be late and Kansas City would play through us and then they'd switch it and then we're running and tracking and then we're a little bit all over the place. I think we got better at that as a team, but ultimately it was difficult for a lot of teams in MLS's back to try to play on much of front foot because they were elevated preseason games almost because we had not played anybody. So there wasn't that normal sharpness that some of these games have because we had to go through that period where you're kind of learning on the fly and getting back into it. So obviously we want to be a team that tries to press high and at certain moments, but also we want to play free. We have a lot of guys who can do some very fun, incredible things. Albert showed his worth in the first game. Darwin shows how special he was. His free kick was really good. Obviously we have Mauro who has a history of scoring. So we want to be a team that also plays free at that point in time. And I think that's something we're still working on. We do have new pieces and we haven't done it as well as I think we can at times. And I think everyone would say that ultimately, because if we look at the lineup, Marco's new to that picture. Victor was new. I was new. Darwin was new. Nico Hansen came in last year. So we had some new pieces that we're trying to still get some of those relationships, but we still want to be a team that plays free and creates chances and has fun doing so.
Yeah, not to mention that last year the team really was a counterattacking team. So mm-hmm. I mean, when you think that 11 brains have to be on the same page instantaneously in those 2 seconds when the ball turns over, and as you say, if two guys don't, you know, the whole thing breaks down. So it is a very drilled, organized thing. All right, so what are you guys been working on in training since you got back?
I think a little bit was to kind of take a few days off because we went very hard in Orlando. We worked up a full preseason like most teams, and then we had 3 games in 14 days, I think, or something like that. So they came pretty quickly. And then obviously we want to come back and lower the load a little bit. But I think ultimately we want to self-reflect on our time in Orlando and figure out what we can do better. And I think at times our decision-making on the ball, from myself included to everybody, can be better. And I think the more comfortable we can be being uncomfortable on the pitch, the better we will be. And a lot of times teams will come and press, and whether they press well or not, the more comfortable you can be with that press, the better we're going to be. And that's something we've definitely worked on, because we'd rather have the ball than not have the ball. We want to rest on the ball, not rest in a low block defensively. That's not fun. So I think that's something that we're trying to improve, and everyone from myself to the goalies to the center forwards can all improve on that. And ultimately just keep getting those connections better, because like I said, there's still a few players who only played 5 games. Tab's only been in charge for 5 games, and we're still trying to work on those concepts. And I think we took steps forward in Orlando. We didn't get a win, even though we should have. I think even if it was ugly, I think we still could have gotten one against the Galaxy, and we should have played better in the second half against LAFC, and the Timbers game got away from us a bit. But I think we're taking steps in the right direction, which gives us a lot of excitement going into phase one of MLS's back again, or whatever they might call it.
I don't know. I don't know yet. I know it's phase one, though. It's Eric Valentin joining us here. Yeah, so you got to be pumped now. I mean, you're going to get to play some games in BBVA. I know you've been back in there for some practice games. First game's FC Dallas, it's your rival. 6 games, you're going to play them twice, Sporting twice, Colorado and Minnesota, if I'm correct here. But the games are again going to come very quick and heavy. So I'm assuming there will be a pretty extended roster that may be needed for this time period.
Of course. And that's what they've been focusing on recently with all this going on, is everyone needs to be ready from player 1 to 22. We need to use everybody, and they're not easy games. If you look at the teams that we are playing, Minnesota has shown how good they can be. Kansas City is a good team as well, which we know that. Colorado started off the season 2-0. And then obviously, you know, in MLS's back, it's interesting because certain teams can come and fit. And a lot of times individual moments of brilliance in those first few games really were the changing point, or just individual mistakes. Those were kind of how the games were separated. And then Dallas is a rival, and those games are always extremely difficult. So we do not have a quote-unquote easy first 6 games, but ultimately those are the fun ones. We want to play good teams. We want to continue to challenge ourselves. And we had difficult games in Orlando, which was great. And I think that we showed that we could play with any team in this league. And it's exciting to get back in there. And we're going to need everyone from the 35, 36-year-old Boney and Miner to the 16-year-old Juan that we probably just signed. And it's going to be exciting to see some of these younger guys get out there and play some competitive matches and show what they can to myself and the coaches and have a lot of fun doing so.
2 quick questions before we let you go. How about the young guys? Have they added a freshness to training? Have they stepped right in there and kind of gone with the flow of everything? Or are they still feeling their way around a bit?
They're very respectful. They haven't filled up my water bottle as much as I'd like, but we'll get there, though. But these are good players.
Bring me my shoes.
Excuse me?
Bring me my shoes.
Exactly. No, you have to ease them into it a bit. Now, they're very respectful. They're very curious, which is great. And they're good players. They have – They pass the eye test, is what I say. When you watch them play, you can say, they got something. And they're young enough. I mean, I was talking to Juan. I turned 29, and he's 16. To think that I'm 13 years older than him is wild to me. Yeah. So for me, it's impressive to see that. And I was playing next to Ian today. And Ian was he's 18 years old, I believe, as well. Then Marcelo was on one of the – in the midfield. So he's 20, Nico Lemoyne, or Marcelo's 19, Nico's 20 on the pitch as well. And then Juan and Rios come in, and these guys are 16, 17 years old. It's exciting to see. And they have a lot of potential. There's going to be some ups and downs. They're going to make mistakes. But I always tell the young guys that I don't care if you make mistakes. And guess what? You're going to make them. And you're going to make a lot. But just make sure you react to those mistakes in the best way possible and try to win the ball back, then you'll be great from there.
Yeah, and Zarek's talking about Ian Hoffman, who was just signed and actually was brought in with the under-17 German national team before going with the U.S. under-20 team in Germany. There's a lot of high marks in and around his play. All right, last one before I let you go. We got a great Champions League, 8 teams left.
Oh, don't make me pick.
Yeah. Atalanta, PSG, Leipzig, Atletico, Barca, Bayern, Manchester City, and Lyon. So there's 2 teams there that have won it. We may have a new winner finally, and those 2 teams are squaring off, Barca and Bayern. Who are you picking to win the Champions League? You got to pick?
To be complete, I don't want to say Bayern because I feel like that's a cop-out. I don't want to go that normal route.
Okay.
So if we're going to go, I don't think Man City will do as well as people think. I think they will get through the round. I'd love to see someone completely different. Yeah. Love to see Red Bull or Atalanta. You know what I mean? I enjoy when not the normal teams and these underdogs. That's why the EPL has been so fun to watch, when you see Wolves doing well and Leicester's in third place and you see all these big clubs losing and the shuffling. It's fantastic. So I hope that there's a little bit of a wrinkle thrown in there. Hopefully it's not Barcelona or Bayern Munich getting to the final again. It's exciting though. And I'm extremely, extremely excited personally because Fulham just got promoted. So that's another one. I'm excited about that. Yep, exactly. So hopefully we see a wrinkle thrown into the last 4 of the Champions League after this next round. I'd be excited about that.
I like your call on Atalanta because they play a great game. But the other thing I think with them is they may not have the depth of some of those more powerful teams, you know, the Barces or maybe in this case the Bayerns and the Cities. But since it's single elimination, I think that's a nice little advantage and bonus point for them. And
I must say that we play the only sport where – I genuinely believe that any team on any day can beat somebody. I don't – maybe hockey might be like that, but typically in basketball, if you have a one-off and one team's really stacked and the other team isn't, they will pretty much take care of it. I'm thinking football too. But soccer or football, whatever you want to say, has shown over the years that you just need one really good game. And any team can beat anybody tactically. You can have individual moments of brilliance. And I think you see a lot more upsets in that because of the way our game is played compared to other sports. And that's the best part, though. When these single elimination games happen, anything can happen. I look back to when Salt Lake went into LAFC and beat them in the playoffs. And you're thinking, that's not going to happen. And then it was a massive upset. And it was fantastic. And I just don't think that happens in many other sports, which is what makes ours so unique and so fun to watch.
No better way to end the interview than that. That's a great sermon right there, delivered by the Reverend Zarek Valentin.
Oh, stop.
Zarek, best of luck against FC Dallas. I'm sure I'm going to talk to you before then. Thank you very much for coming on the show tonight. Great insight from the bubble, from training, from everything. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. That's Zarek Valentin, Dynamo right back. That interview brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Also, Lustav Vermouth. Get a little Spain in your life. Lustav Vermouth is great in a gin and tonic with an orange peel, with a little tonic water, club soda. Same thing. You cut a little orange peel in there. You break it. You get that essence in there. It's refreshing, especially in a hot Houston, Texas. Also, Hugh O'Connor, 7620 Katy Freeway in the Marquee Entertainment Center. Big home of the Houston Liverpool Supporters Club, who are big supporters of this show. And we appreciate everybody over at Hugh O'Connor's. We'll take a break. We got more to come. We tell you, pretty baby.
Oh, I gotta set you straight. This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters. We're going to continue our show on here tonight. This next interview is brought to you by Lustav Vermouth. Lustav Vermouth, get a little Spain in your life. Lustav Vermouth is fun over ice with tonic water, club soda, or my favorite, paired with your favorite gin in a gin and tonic with an orange peel and a few drops of lime juice. Lustav Vermouth, refreshing. Try the Rojo, hints of caramel and cola. The Rojo's great in a Manhattan or a Negroni, or the Rosé with a hint of vanilla, or the White, which are both great in gin and tonics. Lustav Vermouth, ask for it. at your local liquor store. They will order it. As we welcome you back here, presented by the Daspit Law Firm, we bring in now a man that's created quite the niche for himself. Brian Chiaretta is a writer for American Soccer Now, does an amazing job of tracking and compiling data on American players playing overseas. He tracks them from when they originally get over there and follows their career and shares that with all of us. He joins us now. Brian, thank you very much for coming on the show. Did I make you thirsty there?
Yes, you did. And first of all, thanks very much, Glenn. I appreciate being on the show as always. It's been quite a labor of love here to have the opportunity to cover the sport in this manner for this many years.
Yeah, we're excited to have you on. For my listeners, just your background a little bit and how you decided to specialize on the American player overseas.
Well, you know, it started off with that. I hit Yanks Abroad, and that was the first place that would let me write for them. And that was around 2006, 2007. And I was just trying to make a niche for myself. And I figured, well, you know, there's always so many great reporters covering the game everywhere. I might as well cover what the young kids are doing. And they're easy access. It's interested to get the ops, you know, to cover their development. And the U20 World Cup was coming up then in Canada, which would give me a chance to go cover it. So I went down that road, but I didn't want to just be a youth soccer reporter. I wanted to cover them throughout their entire careers, both domestically and abroad. And you know, flash forward 13, 14 years later, here I am. And I've got to see the generations come through at all phases. Both beginning careers, mid careers, and end of careers, and it's been very fascinating to see. You know, you learn, you know, who's good, who's not, and what are signs to watch for when a kid's about ready to break through, and where people are going to go for during their prime years, and so who goes into coaching at the end. You know, it's just very interesting.
He's at Brian Chiaretta on Twitter, and you spell his last name S-C-I-A-R-E-T-T-A. He's Brian Chiaretta of American Soccer Now. All right, I'm going to go right into a signing. Houston Dynamo signed Ian Hoffman as a member of the under-20 national team, played in the youth setup at Karlsruhe in Germany. He's also very familiar, obviously, to Tab Ramos, the coach of Houston, and also Omid Namazi. Tell us about him and maybe what we would expect from him in Major League Soccer.
You know, I think he's a very good player. And, you know, for an organization like Houston that wants to, you know, have a youthful approach similar to what they're doing up in Dallas, I think it's important to get that start. And maybe their academy doesn't have a player the level of Ian yet. But in terms of giving some kind of encouragement that they have, that they're willing to play some young American players and have some success with young American players, they're bringing in a player that they really believe in. And, you know, Tab and especially Omid, who coached him at the U18 level, are very familiar with this kid. I think it's a good first signing. It makes a lot of sense. And for Ian, he gets to go, you know, play for a team or with coaches that have set jobs. They're not going to get fired anytime soon. And you get to go play for a team that believes in you. And whether you go to Sweden or it's not so much the league that he's going to, MLS or anything, it's finding a place where when you're 18 years old, where the coaches value you and respect you. You can't, I mean, that's more valuable than gold, and you overlook whatever league you want to go to just to have that kind of environment. I think he's getting that. I think the test will be for him. You know, I don't like to compare young players who are just starting with very, very good players and established players, but, you know, think of like a guy like John Harkes or Fabian Johnson, who could play all over the field very effectively. You know, Ian has that in him, plays right back, all the way across the midfield, center midfield, outside midfield. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think the challenge for Tab and Omid and Ian will be to keep the versatility, but really also centering on a main position where he can go and be an impact player, not just be used to plug holes here and there, but find his best position and let him, you know, be an impact player for the Dynamo. And then I think after a couple of years, it's going to be good. If he does really well, they'll probably sell him back to Europe. But in the meantime, it'll also show these Houston Academy kids that this isn't just a team that plays, you know, older foreign players. If you're a young American player, you will get minutes. So this is a very good signing for all the parties involved.
All right. So you made a great, great point there about the fact that it's good to be wanted, number one.
Yeah.
And then number two, there are times you don't want to be a Swiss Army knife and use to plug holes because you become the master. You know, you learn a lot of things, but you don't really sometimes, and we've seen this happen with players, really understand positionally something in and out as opposed to being moved around a lot. You mentioned his superpower, and that may be versatility. What else jumps up out to you about him? Because I've watched a lot of tape on him. He's certainly very busy and, to your point, very versatile. What else would you say that we would focus on?
I think he's, you know, he's technically very strong. Like, you know, he's got a good touch. And, you know, he strikes me as, you know, a guy who's going to bring some leadership. You know, I like his background as a kid. His family. I did a piece on him where I spoke with his family, and they're great. You know, so he comes from like a really good background and very mature kid. Remember, this is a kid who was called up by Germany's youth national teams too. You know, because they were over there and they were impressed by him. So, you know, his grandmother, I believe, was the one that was from Germany. So he brings off some, you know, he brings some impressive traits when he was over there. I think, you know, his intelligence to be able to know all those positions at such a young age is really, he's not just an explosive attacker or just an explosive, you know, fullback. He's just a good, well-rounded soccer player. So he knows the sport. Like I said, now it's just going to be, the coaching that's going to find his, you know, bring out the best ways for him to impact games and control games and also maintain, use that maturity to blossom into a young leader, perhaps maybe with them. He's going to be getting some U-20 call-ups, I imagine, should this cycle continue, as we all hope it will. He did very well in the U-20 camp back in January. So, you know, he's impressed everywhere he's gone, and he was a real, I don't think he lost a game with the US U-18s when he's playing with Omid. So there's, it's just the well-rounded nature and his ability to read games, I think, is really what is jumps out most.
Brian, obviously, you know the player very well. Tab Ramos does, Omid Namazi does. If you look at this player, how long does it take to accelerate his development where he's getting minutes in Major League Soccer? Is that something that could happen this year? Is it next year?
Yeah, I mean, this is such a tough year to develop as a young player. I mean, we don't know – the rate at which we got the first six games, I think, released after the shutdown. And, you know, if the stage after this has like a lot of games and over a short period of time, they might have to employ a lot of squad rotation. And then that's always going to work in the favor, as we're seeing in Europe right now, and five subs and all these other rules are geared towards getting more players on the field. It's going to be tough for him also because he has to get a quarantine going down to Texas.
Let's do this.
I think he's going to be
about COVID. Yeah. If there was no COVID or anything going on,
yeah,
all the challenges that we know are here with a manager and a staff that knows him very well, what would you think the timeline for him would be to be actually getting minutes in MLS?
I think this player
inside and out.
Yeah, I think he's going to get player minutes towards the end of the season. I would think on a normal year, he'd be playing regularly next year as a 19-year-old after the U-20 World Cup. I think they'd let him focus on the U-20 World Cup through May, you know, sparingly, maybe some minutes beforehand. I think, you know, we started seeing that with a lot of players in MLS, like after the last U-20 World Cup, like Abubakar Keita for Crew. Like he started, they didn't really use him much, but then after the U-20 World Cup is when he started to take off. And I think that's when they would use him for that, because I think he's going to be a starter for that team.
Yeah, we don't want to put the horse before the cart here, but he's obviously a very talented young man, Ian Hoffman. We're talking to Brian Chiaretta of American Soccer now. All right, let's move on to Anthony Robinson. Had a great season for Wigan. He's a left back. He's now purportedly going to Sheffield United, who had the amazing season. This is a great move for him.
I think so. Look, I think he's even if it's not Sheffield United, it'll be a club of that caliber. Look, you know, Enda Stevens is a very good left back for Sheffield United. I mean, the guy's played 19,000 league minutes for Sheffield and Portsmouth before that over the last five seasons. So he's a workhorse. He's 30 years old. But, like, look, if you're going to go to a top club in the Premier League, you know, top 10 team in the Premier League, you're going to have to compete with minutes against somebody good. So, now it's just a full-team Irish international. But, look, I think he's putting himself in a position where it's not like AC Milan. It is winnable competition. And I think the club is – when I did an interview with him 2 weeks ago, he was clear. He was not going to go to a club just because it had a big name. He was going to go to a club that where he could win and he could play. Those were his two things he was looking at. And, you know, I think at Sheffield United, he's found a nice combo there if that is the club indeed he goes to. If it's not, he'll find something along those lines. But finding a left back of that speed is great. And what I was impressed with last year was he wasn't just a fullback anymore who just bombed forward, and that was what he did. His defensive game sharpened up big time last year, where he was, he was really able to contain opposing wingers and stuff. And I think that's, he's grown in his game so much to the point where he's overcome his health scares and whole health issues, where I think he's in line for a real breakout right now, and this is good to see.
Exciting stuff there. Let's move on now to another player. Cameron Carter-Vickers obviously has done a lot with Luton Town. He's gotten a lot of minutes. Where do you see his career at this point? Because there was a lot of promise and still is promise with him.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Luton Town end of the season run was as particularly going back since January, was the career high point of Carter-Vickers. I mean, they were so deep. They were all nearing double digits deep in the relegation fight. And the amount of points per game they were getting just because of Vickers and the less goals they were conceding, the fact that they survived relegation is remarkable. And they did it in a thrilling way, and Vickers was a big part of it. I think £2.5 million would probably be the price Tottenham is asking for a release. That probably prices Luton Town out. But, I mean, I would love to see Carter Vickers. I mean, he's just been on either mid-table teams or relegation battles, his entire career, and he's played now 5-6 different championship teams. I'd like to see him go to someplace where he can show he can win, not just be like a really great, clog in the back, but also, contribute in all aspects of the game, like the true modern center back with passing out of the back and everything. It's going to come down to who can afford him right now. Tottenham wants to get something out of him. $2.5 million is not unreasonable, but it probably prices him out of the defensive teams that really could use him in that bunker kind of style that he thrived in at Luton Town. So we'll see. He's a good player. He remains a good player. But, I think he needs to probably show he can do something on a winning side as opposed to just like a team that's always overwhelmed by lack of talent.
Talking to Brian Chiaretta, let's go on to Matt Miazga. I think some people might have been, their heads turned when he signed with Chelsea. He's been on a litany of loans, Vitesse in the Netherlands, Nantes in France, and Reading in England. I guess he's now Chelsea property again. Is he somebody you see actually competing to try and improve them defensively? Or what do you think the future of Matt Miazga is, who's played for the U.S. national team?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're looking at another loan. But he was, he lost his cool a couple of points there. I think, towards Reading, he had that red card in the three-game suspension, sorry. Yeah. And I think he was fined for another incident in the Netherlands. He's a good player. And I think he should have options. I don't think he's going to go stay at Chelsea very much. But I think, the positives outweigh the negatives for his time at Reading. And I certainly think, he could be, pushing for another team that is looking for a promotion out of the championship. I think that's his level. But, he's a good and consistent player, but I think you're going to want to see him, another player, try to push towards earning 3,000 minutes a season, which would make him like an every game starter. He hasn't really quite done that. He's had a couple injuries here and there, but, you want to start taking on the leadership now and showing maturity because he's no longer a youth player. He's really entering his prime here. So you're wanting to see one of those players, make that transition from, oh, he's a good young player, a good prospect, into there's your mature leader. There's your guy. I think he has that talent. So that's what you really want to see from him in the next step he makes in his career.
Brian, as always, tremendous insight. We appreciate it. We look forward to your next visit on the show. Thank you for getting us updated on all these players, and including Ian Hoffman, who's now coming to Major League Soccer in Houston. Thank you so much for coming on the show, as always.
It's always a pleasure, Glenn, anytime you need.
All right, Brian Chiaretta, he's outstanding, and some great information there. And for those of you who are Houston and MLS fans, you got a lot there on Ian Hoffman that you have not heard from other places. Before we go to break here, Nebo Bandovic, the former leading scorer for the Houston Hotshots, he wants to invite you to start your journey to financial freedom through real estate investing. After finishing his soccer career, Nebo went on to build a real estate investing empire with multimillion-dollar portfolios. He wants to teach you how to do the same. Follow Nebo at Nebo Bandovic, Bandovic, on Instagram for daily investment tips and secrets. And for more information on how to be mentored by the master himself through his VIP program, that's at Nebo Bandovic, Bandovic on Instagram. That interview with Brian Chiaretta brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. We'll take a break. We got more to come.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, final segment here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. We're going to go very, very big here in a minute with our next guest. A big thank you again to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, our presenting sponsors of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, they'll bring you a personalized approach. You get in a car, boat, motorcycle accident, you might drive an 18-wheeler. They will represent you 24/7 nights and weekends. It is the Daspit Law Firm, 713-322-HURT, daspitlaw.com. Don't forget, they get us on the air. They also bring us guests like this, and he's a great friend of the show, a good personal friend as well. We get former Newcastle defender, Fox analyst Warren Barton joins us now. Warren, thank you very much for coming on and wrapping us up in big style tonight.
Always a pleasure, my friend. No problem.
First, just give us a little update on you and how you're doing out in San Diego, because you're in a different part of the country.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, you know, frustrating, anxious as well, like everybody. You know, we thought in California that we set a good standard earlier on in the pandemic, and with the population and, you know, how close, obviously, people live, and this particularly in Los Angeles, Orange County. So we're still in that phase one, but we're healthy, we're safe. We're lucky enough as a family that we live in a wonderful place in San Diego, which is quite close to the ocean, so you can go for a nice walk. But, you know, I do miss coaching. I do miss doing the media side as well. And it's just time to reflect, and patient is a key word, but I'm not very good at being patient. So as my wife keeps telling me, but yeah, just itching to try and look around. The good thing is now we've got sports that's been out and being able to watch, whether it's Champions League, MLS, that's been going on, the Premier League, Bundesliga, Liga MX. So there's enough stuff on the TV now to keep us occupied. But we're safe and healthy, Glenn, and that's all we can ask for, because it's been a really difficult time for everybody in the world. And I think that's where we have to get our head around. It's not just a certain isolated people. It's affected everybody. But we're here, and we can talk about the great game, and that keeps us going.
All right, so let's get your first impressions on the MLS's back tournament. And, I mean, obviously Major League Soccer's done a great job with the protocol and everything. But it's a tournament that some people like to condition and say maybe, you know, it's not that important. I beg to differ. I think there's something to be taken out of the tournament. How about you?
Yeah, no doubt. I think it's been great. You know, really enjoyed the interviews with the players, with the coaches as well, while the games are going on. That's been quite intriguing to listen to some of the coaches. It's the kiss of death. Every time someone got interviewed, someone scored against them. So that was quite amusing. I think it was great for, you know, Don Garber and the MLS to get people out there again, Ian and Fox obviously involved, getting it on the network as well. We can watch it. Vitally important for the coaches, the two, you know, two coaches that are involved in the final, obviously Oster with his Orlando team that are looking to do well, and Gio of Portland have done an excellent job. It's just worth watching him, the way he's been celebrating the goals and intense. So it's been really, really enlightening watching that, the passion of the game. The players have done a credit. It took them a couple of games to really get into it, if I'm being totally honest. And it must be very, very difficult as a player. You know, playing in front of 52,000 Geordie screaming at you is quite easy. But there, where there's, you know, one man and a dog watching a game, it can be challenging. But they've shown the professionalism, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. As I said, it's given the opportunity to some players to play, given them some playing time, and given the coaches a foundation. And then it kicks off in another, 10 days from now. So it's given an ideal preparation for everybody going forward. And obviously someone like Dallas, which is obviously near to where you are, is, you know, they're playing catch up a little bit because they wasn't involved. But all around, Glenn, I think it's been very, very positive for all of us to get back into the groove.
Former Newcastle defender Warren Barton joining us here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. Okay, I'm going to take you to two stories in England. I'm going to start with Chris Wilder and Sheffield United. And your thoughts on what an amazing story that has been for the Blades after gaining promotion.
It's been a wonderful story. You know, anyone that knows that area, Sheffield, it's a real industrial working man town. And Chris epitomises that with his work ethic, his commitment. But also he knows the game. He's not a fool. The system of three at the back for teams that normally get promoted is a no-go. They get caught out. But they hit the ground running. And that's so important for teams that get promoted, and they didn't get injuries as well, key injuries going forward. I think they've got an outstanding goalkeeper. But a lot of it is down to Chris, the way he's managed the players and put his players in a situation where they're comfortable to see games out. But it was so important that they hit the ground running. They got some good results. They give them some confidence, give them some belief, and they've hung on in there. And I think any young aspiring coach, you know, I think at the moment, Glenn, and we speak about this every time we see each other, everyone wants to be Pep and Klopp. But there's difference. You know, they're in a luxury where they've got ultimately the best tools in the world to coach. Chris hasn't at Sheffield. But what he's been able to do, and yet they've got some money behind him, and he's done that wisely, but he's worked with his players and find out about their personalities and how he can get the individual, you know, best out of each player in that circumstances and his coaching staff. So in that environment, it's about coaching and man management and dealing with players. And, you know, some of his interviews that he had have been excellent. It's a fairy tale because you don't normally see that in a club like Sheffield that come into it. Normally they just try and survive. But he's done excellent. But the challenge, and he knows, will be next season and the season after, because that's what the Premier League does. I was lucky enough to be involved, you know, 15 years in it. It is relentless. And the bar gets higher and higher and higher each time. So that's his challenge coming along. You've only got to look at Bournemouth, of how well they did at the beginning and their style of football. And then, after 3, 4, 5 seasons, it can catch its toll on you. So, but great story, great person, really a soccer guy. And anyone that wants to know about just working hard and being honest and focused on your job, he's someone that can do it. Because as I said, not everyone can be Pep.
All right. Speaking of adapting and being promoted, Leeds United after 16 years, historic club, all the names, Bremner, Peter Lorimer, we can go all the way back to all these incredible names. They're back in the first division. Marcelo Bielsa has studied Chris Wilder and Sheffield United. He's admitted to that. What a story that is, and what an unlikely source in El Loco Bielsa taking Leeds United. Well, first of all, just taking the job at Leeds. Second of all, getting him promoted.
I think it's a wonderful. Leeds is a huge club. Me and you are old enough to remember them days of what Leeds was. And obviously, I played at Elland Road. And that's probably one of the best five atmospheres in football in England. It's, again, very similar to Newcastle. Just in Leeds, it's one club in that city. They've obviously had great success winning the league. A dear, dear friend of mine that lost, you know, took his life. Gary Speed was there with David Batty, who was an outstanding player for that team. Gary McAllister. Gordon Strachan, when they come up. It's a wonderful atmosphere, big, big club. I like him as a coach. Yes, do I dislike the fact that he's spying on teams and putting people in bushes and sending his staff to take notes? But that's part of his charisma and part of what makes him what he is. And, it's the same with Jurgen Klopp running up the touchline, punching the air and the smile and the teeth and the snarling. That's what you get with that coach at Leeds. He's a little bit quirky, a little bit unusual. But he's got a personality, and I think these players responded that they're a young team. They're going to need to have a little bit more experience. And I don't mean like 30-year-old players, but they need a little bit more know-how. You can't just play that youth all the time, but maybe a 26, 27-year-old, a couple of them sprinkled in with that young team with the experience that he's got. And Leeds, again, like Sheffield, if they can hit the ground running, that place would be in uproar because it's a wonderful stadium. And as I said, a great history and tradition in that club. Now, I couldn't believe it, Glenn, when they said 16 years. 16 Leeds have not been in the Premier League. And they're as big as anything in there if they can get it going. They're as big as City, no doubt. If City's only a big club because of the money now. And if Leeds get it right, they've got the fan base and the passion and the history and tradition to challenge. But they've, first and foremost, it's just to get in that league and enjoy it and be safe and then build from there. Because it potentially that they could do very, very well in the future. It wasn't too long ago. They was in Champions League semi-finals and quarter-finals with David O'Leary. So, I'm old enough to remember that.
Former Newcastle United defender, you've seen him on TV doing World Cups, Warren Barton, with Fox. By the way, a young American who played in Major League Soccer, Jack Harrison.
Yes.
Wake Forest actually did a very, very good job for them, as you know. All right, so I watched Manchester United and FC Copenhagen yesterday. United ultimately gets through... It's a very indifferent performance for me. And the one thing I go to is Paul Pogba. And I know at times, because Manchester United fans want so badly for him to be fully bought in. But it's one of those games that I see him strolling around again. And it's got me questioning whether this guy's fully bought in or can ever be fully bought in.
What are your thoughts? I'm saying with you, Glenn, I was disappointed in their performance. Not just Pogba's. Like I see Rashford was giving the ball away. Even Fernandes, as good as he's been and he got the penalty, he kept giving the ball away. They seem really lethargic. They seem very pedestrian the way that they played. And Copenhagen, you know, any Scandinavian teams, when you played against them in Europe or even the national teams, they're going to be honest, hardworking, disciplined and organised. And to play against that, you've got to commit, show the commitment and the fight against that. You've got to challenge that. And hopefully then your quality and speed of play will get you through that. They didn't do that. You know, what they can do is get on the flight and come home or whatever. You know, they're staying there, obviously, but they can put their head on the pillow and say, we got through, and it's a game under their belt. And that's the way I would look at it. And we can point the finger at Popper and, you know, Fred was playing in midfield and was they strong enough at the back? They kept giving the ball away and Maguire kept on hitting it out. There was lots of things we could question, but the bottom line, they're in the next round and, you know, they're in another semi-final. The expectations United have gone up, though, because they're talking about getting Sancho, you know, as I said, Marcus Rashford and, you know, Martial. They've got pace, they've got energy, they've got quality. It wasn't there the other day. Maybe because they've had a bit of a break, it takes a little bit to get that second win. I would expect in the next round they're going to be a lot sharper, a lot quicker. But he will come good, Glenn. He's too good a player and with maturity that I think he's not just going to let his Man United career just drift along. What he's shown Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at the moment, they can actually do without him. And you know players with egos, they don't like that. They want to be felt. So that may be the spurring point that they need to say, right, Paul, if you're not at it today, we can throw someone else in, a Sancho if we get him. We can play a little different formation. Fernandes has come in and done well. So you're not the kingpin. We don't rely on you. And United's never really relied on anybody. As soon as it got like that with Beckham, Fergie got rid of him. As soon as it started getting like that with
Ronaldo?
With Ronaldo, he got rid of him. Not saying it was the right thing to do, but that's the mentality. And Ollie will have the same mentality with Fergie because he'll pick up the phone and ask him. As soon as someone starts getting away and they move on. But United are definitely going in the right direction with the young players. They've definitely got pace. It was disappointing because I think we're always expecting to see a little bit of United. But it wasn't there. But the good thing is they won the game, in my point of view, because I want the British teams to do well in Europe. They got through and, you know, they're in the next round and they've got a chance of getting to another final.
Warren Barton brought to us by Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLawAustin.com as well. All right, down to 8 in the Champions League. The good news is there's a real good chance we're going to get a first-time winner because Bayern and Barcelona are playing each other. So is it time for us to get a new winner in the Champions League? I certainly would like to see something fresh.
Yeah, I would definitely. I think when you look at Man City and PSG, they're the two that really jump out to me. I would like to see them to go forward. Bayern Munich at the moment look menacing. They just look like that Bayern machine. You know, I've been lucky enough to work with Fox over the last 4 or 5 years with the Bundesliga and just watch that team. This team is what I like. They've got pace. They've got youth. They've got arrogance. And they've got a goal-scoring machine like Lewandowski up front who's getting better. He's like Ronaldo and Zlatan. He's getting better with age. I think he's a better player now than when he was like 23, 24. And he was a hell of a player then. His movement is good. And then you throw into that, you've got Gnabry, who's on fire as well. And Thomas Müller, I think everybody would love to go and have a pint of beer with him and have a chat with him because he's such a likeable man and loves his football and loves to train and got a personality. And they would be my favourites. But I still think you can get Boateng. I think you can get at him. And as much as Davis is doing great, I think you can maybe exploit a little bit of area in that in and behind them, but you've got to get the ball first and you've got to stop them coming at you. They would be. But yeah, I think you're right then. I think we're ready to see someone else. As much as it's romantic to see Real Madrid keep winning and it's great and Zidane and a great, you know, an awe of him as a coach and as a player. But I think the time's right now. And I think it's the way the game's going. I think it's the way money is and the way the system is. You know, Liverpool hadn't won it for 30 years. We're talking about, you know, Leeds being back in the Premier. You know, it's the money can talk and can help it out. So there's lots of new things that are happening.
So Hansi Flick, and we've heard a lot of the players say this, and one of the beneficiaries of that was Thomas Müller, who you just talked about, and how wonderfully happy he is playing again. I've heard a lot of players say he's brought the joy back to the team once he got the job when it comes to the actual playing of football. So how much do we have to applaud him and pat him on the back, the manager of Bayern Munich?
I had the conversation with Ian Joy and Kate, and Kate asked me the question, now, what tactically did he change? He didn't. He just put a smile back on their face. He just got them. He had their respect straight away because he'd won a World Cup as a coach. That most of that team had worked with him, or the heart of that team had worked with him and won the World Cup. So he didn't need to walk in and start dictating and shouting and screaming and being a leader of the old school. He just got them playing and saying, look, I remember Sir Bobby Robson, and I think I said it to you, Glenn, when he came in with Alan Shearer after Ruud Gullit had took over and we were struggling, Bobby went up to Alan.
His favourite coach, by the way, Ruud Gullit.
Yeah, what a hell of a player! Great pundit.
No question.
Wasn't a great coach. He said to Alan, "I don't want you facing away from goal. I want you facing the goal. So go and score goals." And he got five against Sheffield Wednesday the next game. So it's not difficult, you know. People try and analyse it. And what Hansi Flick done? How has he changed it around? He's brought pace. He's brought pace to that team and energy and a vibrant. And if you can't enjoy playing in that team, then you shouldn't be playing the game. And that's why he'll get rid of players that don't want to do it. And how would you not want to coach? How would you not? Well, that's why I look at Martial sometimes. He looks like he's got the world on his shoulders. You're playing for Man United. You've got a coach that loves you. I'd be smiling and I wouldn't leave that training ground. And the same with the Bayern players. They enjoy being around. Even with Thiago, that looks like he's leaving, he's still playing it. And he's still playing and enjoying and he's assisting teams. So as a coach, I think we get caught up too much in the X's and O's, and that's vitally important for lesser players. But the top players,
we want some really romantic, complicated answers. That's very scientific and off the charts as to why things have turned around. So it's interesting.
I'll be married 29 years, Glenn. It's just being honest. That's it. Honest and talking. People ask me, what's
another milestone you've achieved that I haven't. So
what's the remedy there?
Exactly. We're talking to Warren Barton. We got two more quick ones with him. By the way, the Bayern Munich opponent is Lionel Messi, who comes off
an
unbelievable game. Okay, so this is drama at its best because everybody has been hammering Kiki Setién. What if Lionel Messi takes his team on his back and wins them a Champions League with this malign manager? We know it's distinctively possible.
It is. I mean, that's why it's a one-off game with Messi. Would you bet against him? I wouldn't, because I think he's got a point to prove. I still think the coach will go, and whether it be Xavi that comes or another coach will come in. But I think Messi's looked around and thinking, I'm going to win this. He didn't do it for Argentina, but I think he could do it for Barcelona. And Bayern will look at it and say, if we can just keep him quiet, but you remember what Messi did to Boateng a few years ago when he made him fall over like a tree. So that's the thing that Bayern will look at and say, we need to get numbers around him to stop him getting on the ball and making things happen. But that's a lot easier said than done because he's not from this planet, Messi. He's been given to us from God, so we have to enjoy it.
Warren, listen, as always, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. We appreciate it. Your insight, always great, and I know I can always take these interviews even longer with you, so thank you again.
Absolute pleasure, Glenn. All the best to you. Stay safe.
All right. Stay safe in California, by the way. Atalanta, PSG, RB Leipzig, Atletico Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Man City, Lyon. Those are your single elimination quarterfinals, which makes it good for teams like Atalanta, who may not be as deep. All right, that does it for tonight. A big thank you to Tyler Scott, Victor Ariza. I'm Glenn Davis. A big thank you to all our sponsors, including Daspit Law Firm, our presenting sponsors, Lustau Vermouth, NB Elite Realty, and Hugh O'Connors. Good night, everyone.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.